Well, we're talking about Noah's Ark with Larry Stone, his work. Noah, the real story, fascinating. We'll get right into what an American astronaut tried to do and some other stories when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Larry Stone with us as we talk about his work. Noah, Larry, the late astronaut James Irwin, who died of a massive heart attack some time ago, was obsessed with finding Noah's Ark. He'd been out there a couple times. Was he ever successful?
No, he wasn't. He had walked on the moon. He was the eighth person to walk on the moon, but he never found the Ark. He, as you said, he took several trips over there, and he said the Ark has eluded us. He was kidnapped during one of his trips, and his wife, Mary, described an event where he was alone on the side of the mountain, and an enormous jagged rock whizzed by his head, and sparks flew as rocks slammed against the rock he was sitting next to. And yet he was able, because he was right up against a great big rock, he was okay. Ararat is very dangerous.
Sure is.
Most mountains, it's about 16,000 feet high, most mountains aren't that spectacular because they have lower mountains around them. Ararat, however, rises up around out of the plains of eastern Turkey, and so it's very, very spectacular. But since there aren't any other mountains except littler Ararat next to it, it's like a giant lightning rod. And so you'll have lightning, you'll have snow, you'll have boulders coming down, you'll have snakes. So it's not a friendly place to go exploring.
Are there groups of people out there, Larry, who do not want people to find the Ark? They want to keep it suppressed.
I don't know of any groups like that now, but there was a fascinating story from the 1850s told by a young man who was Armenian, and he said three Englishmen came to his father's house in Armenia and asked his father to take them to the Ark. These were Englishmen who did not think the Ark existed, and so they were hoping it would not be found. It was a warm summer, and they actually found the Ark. And the three Englishmen, he said, were so incensed that they threatened that if you ever tell anybody about this discovery of the Ark, we'll kill you. Now, he then moved to the United States, and in the 1920s, so when he was an old man, he told this story to a Seventh-day Adventist minister who lived near him in California. That minister carefully wrote down the whole story and then moved to Massachusetts and then eventually to Texas. And the notebook in which he kept the story that had been written down was in a house fire.
Oh,
he rewrote it. But we're dependent upon the memory of a 70-year-old Armenian told to a Seventh-day Adventist minister who then rewrote it about 50 years later.
That's
but it's still a fascinating story.
Yeah, that's a great story. Has anybody ever found, truly found, remnants of the Ark?
In the 1950s, there was a French explorer named Fernand Navarra who went up actually a total of about three times, but he went up once with his son, and you can go online on YouTube and actually see pictures that they took up on Ararat of when they, according to them, found wood of the Ark. And he found this great big piece, and you can see on YouTube him cutting a piece of this wood so they can carry it down. And he published a book called Noah's Ark, I Touched It. I've done a little research. I can't find where that piece of wood is today. It's got, I can't imagine somebody threw it away, but it's got to be somewhere. But he claimed that was really the Ark. It didn't seem to generate as much widespread agreement, though, as I think he had hoped.
Could they have carbon dated that piece of wood if they had gotten it?
They did, and there's inconclusive evidence. Unfortunately.
What has been for you the most riveting story associated with the Ark?
I don't know if this is the most riveting, but it's more, to me it's one of the more interesting. And one of the themes that I keep coming back to is there's so many people that say, I've gotten close, or I have a picture, or I was there and saw it, but don't have quite enough evidence to convince other people. And yet, as you said, if the Ark is found, it's going to be a spectacular thing. Melville Grosvenor, who founded the National Geographic, said it would be the most important archaeological discovery ever.
I think so, too.
In the 1970s, there was a movie by Sunshine Classic on the Ark on Ararat. And there was an actor in California named George Jamal who saw this and said, this is silly. And so what he did was he wrote to Dwayne Gish at the Institute for Creation Research and said, I have been over in Armenia looking for the Ark. This is all made up. And he said he wrote this letter, and nobody got the fact that it was a joke. Well, later, a little bit later, CBS said to Sunshit Classic, we would like you to do an expanded version of this movie and broadcast it on TV. So they contacted George Jamal and said, he said, oh, we just came back. I have a piece of the Ark. And they said, oh, will you show it to us? And he said, well, sure. So he goes out to a railway yard in Long Beach, California, and gets a piece of wood, which I assume was a part of a railroad tie. He cooks it in teriyaki sauce and salt and all kinds of other stuff, and goes before 40 million people on national television on CBS and said, here's a piece of the Ark that I found on Ararat.
What do you think?
And people believed him. Well, what happened was then it was such a success that CBS wanted Sunshine Classic to do another movie, and they contacted him again. He said, I'm going to tell you, I just can't do this a second time. He said the whole thing was a put on. When I was on TV, it was all a fake. And that's unfortunate because it lends an aura of fakeness to some of these things. And so I believe that people are sincere in searching the Ark, but I believe also that it's too great a temptation for people to expand the truth just a little bit or make it up just a little bit. And so consequently, the real stuff isn't accepted as widely as it should be.
Could you imagine, Larry, being, let's say, in a plane or a helicopter flying near the slopes of Mount Ararat, and you see the Ark sticking out of a huge melting chunk of ice? I mean, that to me would be chilling, absolutely chilling, wouldn't it?
It would be. And I think my wife is afraid that with all this research I've done over the last year, that I'm going to wake up one morning and say, let's go over to Eastern Turkey and explore.
You may do that.
Oh, I'd love to do that. But
I mean, in my early days in radio, back in 1971, when I first started into this business in the radio end of it, I started in 1969 mm-hmm. at a TV station, but for radio it was in 71. And I would do stories on the Ark. I was fascinated with this. I wanted to find out if it was real, and if it was real, what did that mean to humanity and, mm-hmm. and everything else? And I was convinced that something's up there.
I believe something's up there, too.
Yeah.
But nobody's found it. Nobody has found evidence enough yet to be able to bring back and say, here it is.
See, outside of the religious overtones of the story of Noah, I think there's a scientific basis that backs up what happened there, too.
Mm-hmm. There's 300 stories, flood stories, all around the world. There's enough unanimity to that that you got to say there's something there. Now, were these stories because floods happen and so different cultures tell flood stories? Or are they a collective memory of one great flood that happened and covered the world?
Maybe. Let's take some calls here for you. First one, we'll go to Irvine, California. Bill is with us right here on Coast to Coast. Bill, welcome to the program. You are on the air with us.
Hey, I have a couple questions, because if you had animals and all that, 16,000 of them, and you get to the mountain, you make it sound like there's a dock there, and they're just going to unload these animals all, like, oh, here we go. And another thing, they only had one way to go, and that was up the mountain. And you say it's real rugged country. Weren't they kind of just leading themselves off to die?
It was a rugged country, but they would come down off the mountain. And in fact, right near Ararat is a town in Armenia that there's a tomb of Noah. And there's when he came down after he did the altar and worship God, he built a graveyard. And there's still there a vineyard that they claim is the descendant of Noah's vineyard.
How high up do you think it is up the mountaintop?
The Ark? Various reports have been in the 13, 14,000 feet range. But, of course, animals, they didn't have to go up. They just had to come down, which is a little bit easier.
There must be a path or something that's easier for them to come down. Obviously, they can't climb down.
Right.
And, you know, and if it's jagged, they'd have problems. So there's got to be something that's a little easier for them to migrate on the way down, don't you think?
Right, right. And, of course, there's much discussion about how they then migrated all over the world. But that's a whole different issue.
That's another story all by itself. We've got Michael in Toronto. Welcome to the program, Michael. Go ahead.
Yes, very interesting. There was a movie back in the 70s called In Search of Noah's Ark back then. You were talking about this person talking about the Ark fraud or something like that back then.
Yes.
Okay, simple question. What do you think happened to the fish? The Bible doesn't mention fish, and then there were the various insects that may or may not have gone into the ark.
That's right. What's interesting is I think the fish could, for the most part, survive
obviously they were
in the water. Probably the insects could. The interesting thing is in the Bible, it talks about everything died that breathed through their nostrils. Insects don't breathe through their nostrils. And it's a very peculiar little phrase in the Bible, and you sort of wonder why it's there, and maybe it's there to distinguish animals from insects. Now, in the movie that's coming out, which doesn't necessarily represent the Bible, nevertheless, insects do go in that ark.
Well, you know what? And they could have been in some region somewhere on the planet, and they just kept hatching themselves.
Yeah.
Or something. We know, like, you ever see a mosquito? Those things are very difficult to wipe out in terms of their colony. They just keep breeding.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, you know, with some of the things, what's your gut tell you, Larry? Now, give me your thought as we, you know, talk about your book, Noah, The Real Story. What's the real story?
Well, what I'm trying to do in the book is I wrote the book, obviously, because people are going to be wanting to talk and interested in the Noah story when they view the movie that's coming out in another couple of weeks. And that movie is the story by Darren Aronofsky, inspired by the story in the Bible and the Quran. And so what I'm trying to do in this book is to explain the real story behind Noah. Talk a little bit about the ark, how you might have built it, the story in the Bible, about the animals, about the search for the ark, about the flood. And then I get into some also where you can see an ark today. People have actually built replicas of the ark. And then I conclude by Noah's secret for surviving the end of the world. And Noah survived the world as he knew it. And I talk about the ways in which the world could be destroyed, because according to the Bible, it's not going to be destroyed again by the flood. But there are other ways in which the end of the world might occur, and Noah gives us a secret for surviving the end of the world.
We go to the Bronx. Let's go to Paul. Hey, Paul, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, George. Hello to your guests also.
Sure,
I would like to ask a very simple question that I thought about myself regarding the ark. Very simple. I'd like you guys to speculate on it. Do you think Yeti or Bigfoot was on the ark? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Do I think Bigfoot was on the ark? The answer to that question is Bigfoot an animal or a human? And I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. If he was an animal, I suppose, if he's a human, the only humans were Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives.
And I suspect, Larry, that this flood did not engulf the entire planet. I suspect it wiped out a certain region. And to those people who have scribed it and talked about it over the ages, to them, the world was where they lived, right?
That's correct. But the Bible seems to be pretty clear that all living things were killed.
All right, so he's got an interesting question. Yeti.
He does.
Which is in the Himalayas, of course. That's the abominable snowman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did he go and get there? And even if we consider it to be subhuman, they would have been wiped out.
Yes. But where do the ones that, where do they come from now? Are they human or are they animals? I don't know.
I don't know. But, you know, if they started, you know.
It's a great question.
Yeah, it is.
In fact, it would be a fun thing to do a novel based on it, on that question.
That's your next one.
There you go.
Let's go. Let's take a few more calls before the break. We've got okay. Nancy in Phoenix, Arizona, first-time caller. Hey, Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, I was listening to your program. It's very interesting. I've become hooked on you, George.
Oh, super, Nancy. Thank you.
Anyway, you're talking about in the 50s that there was a man and his son that found the Ark, and there were pictures of it. And I remember seeing the pictures. I was a teenager. I'm 75 now. And I distinctly remember seeing that and reading the story about how they found it. And they said they thought that maybe someone could come and find it again, but because of the snow, the ice, and the terrain, that it may or may not be possible.
As I mentioned, there are, Nancy, there are pictures still on the YouTube of Fernand Navarra and his son actually discovering a piece of wood up on Ararat. And if you can probably, I don't have the URL right here, but by putting in Fernand Navarra, you can probably find it on YouTube. And you get a real sense by watching that of how much snow and ice and really treacherous it is up there. And it gives you fresh appreciation for what it takes to try to find the Ark. It's like a proverbial needle in a haystack.
You know, with the Ark and then when it started to recede at that 13,000-foot level, which is up there. I'm baffled, Larry, why there hasn't been some organized United Nations type trip to Mount Ararat to look for this.
In part, I think it's because the government of Turkey does not encourage people to go up there. You have to get a permit to do the climbing, and they don't always give those permits real easily. The second thing is that while that makes sense to you and to me, I think that many scientific organizations feel they have other things they would rather be doing.
Well, that could be. Tell us, what's your website, by the way, Larry?
www.noahtherealstory.com. And you can get copies of the book, Noah the Real Story, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lifeway, or the WND Superstore. WND Books is the publisher of it, and it's a pleasure to work with them.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some final phone calls with this split show tonight with Larry Stone, author of the book, Noah, The Real Story. And we're talking Noah, The Real Story. I just love this stuff. I really do. Hey, have you watched our television program, Beyond Belief, yet? It's an incredible story, and it's an incredible show. The next issue that's coming up, the episode, well, you're going to have to watch it. It's free for 10 days. So just go to this website, beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Larry Stone with us. Larry, when you look at the, you know, stories in the Bible, of course, and whether they're real or not, of course, is what one has to debate. But, you know, there's stories in there like Methuselah, that he was almost 1,000 years old. Is that an interpretation of something? I mean, might they have been using a different time scale? How could somebody live that long?
Well, the Bible does say that Methuselah was 969 years old when he died. Methuselah was Noah's grandfather. And interestingly, if you work out the numbers, Methuselah died in the year of the flood. Now, were these real numbers? Well, some people try to explain them away and say that maybe that they're talking about not actual years, but months. But what the Bible does say is that Methuselah lived to be 969, Noah lived to be 950, Adam, in fact, lived to be 930 years old. After the flood, though, interestingly, the lives of these people in the Bible shortens immensely. Abraham lived to be 175 years old. That's still pretty old, but it's nowhere near 950 years. And by the time you get down to Joseph, he only lived to be 110 years old.
Okay, what happened? Why the disparity?
So there's different theories, and some people say that before the flood, there was a canopy over the earth or something that would protect mankind from harmful radiation that we are now exposed to, and that we one of the things the flood did was to remove that protection and as a result, shorten our lifespan.
Yeah, it's called the ozone layer.
Yes, yeah.
maybe. And the movie itself that's coming out, have you seen a preview of it?
I've seen the trailers, I've seen parts of it, and I have read a very early script, so there's no guarantee that the script that I have read is actually going to make it onto the screen.
I assume you're going to go see it, right?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Right, and you're going to compare that to what you believe might have happened?
Yes. Well, we have to realize that the movie is not a word-for-word representation of what's in the Bible or the Quran. What's in the movie is a great drama, a great adventure story by Darren Aronofsky based on the story of Noah in the Bible. But for instance, if you get Noah and his family and the animals on the ark and they're there for a year, there's not a lot of dramatic tension there unless you introduce it. Because they're sitting around, he's feeding them, they're taking care of the animals, they're doing whatever, and maybe playing Monopoly. But other than that, there's no dramatic tension. So the story in the movie introduces a couple of dramatic tension lines that makes it very interesting. I won't give it away and tell you what it is.
I like Russell Crowe. I think every movie he's been in has been superb. He's done a great job.
The great acting, great special effects. They say that there's one scene in the movie Noah that is the most complicated scene ever done by the amazing people at Industrial Light and Magic. And it's because all of the animals in the movie are not real. They're all created digitally, mm-hmm. and yet they look real.
Well, yeah, they've done a computer animation and graphics. It's come a long, long way, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, let's go ahead. Go ahead, Lou.
You know, I was going to say, one of the interesting things you were asking about why people don't send the United Nations or somebody send an expedition over to Ararat. One of the bits of research I did, I was reading a book called The Rocks Don't Lie by a geologist that clearly does not believe there was a worldwide flood and that sort of thing. But one of the things all of a sudden I came across him saying is it's hard to see evidence for what you are sure cannot exist. And then he goes ahead and tells a very interesting story that by the early 1900s, most geologists were convinced that floods could not create effects on the Earth. And he told a story about a geologist out in eastern or Washington State who looked at the rocks and became convinced that the effects of what he was seeing was caused by floods. And yet he went and presented his findings at a geological society meeting, so was virtually laughed out of the room. And spent the next 50 years trying to convince people that the effects that he was seeing in the eastern Washington State were caused by a flood. And eventually, geologists came around to agree with him. But in the 1920s, they were so convinced that floods could not affect the surface of the earth that they just denied the evidence of what they saw. And the point of what I wanted to make there was not that this was Mr. Bretz's, and that was the name of the geologist, that his discoveries were Noah's flood. That's not my point. My point is that it's hard to see evidence for what you're sure is cannot exist. And if you're sure that Noah's Ark never existed, or you're sure that Noah's Ark is not on Ararat, it's hard to see evidence, even if it's right in front of you.
So true. Let's go to Jim in Charleston, West Virginia. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, Larry, George, good morning.
Hey, hi.
Hi, Jim.
I wanted to, you're very interesting talk there, Larry, very interesting. I'm a historian, so this interests me, but I wanted to clarify a couple of things. And, George, you should know this. We're both ex-Navy men.
You got it.
It says in the sixth chapter of Genesis about the ark. It says, make yourself an ark out of resinous wood. That means the wood excreted resin. It says, make it with reeds and line it with pitch. Now, pitch is tar. The resinous wood would have been the frame and the internal decking of the ark. The reeds would have been what would have set up the frames of it, making it highly flexible. When I was in the Oregon, I rode on reed boats. You could about snap those things almost in half, and they'd come back true. The tar would keep it, would make it waterproof inside and out. Now, about the animals, it says in the seventh chapter, it says to take seven of all clean animals and two of every unclean.
Correct.
And everything that crawls and flies, birds and anything with wings, which would have meant insects as well. Now, there were some people, I've talked to different theologians in my studies, and a lot of people say that perhaps the animals went into a natural hibernation for the 40 days and 40 nights of the rain, plus the months that followed until the waters receded. Now, the ark most probably was flat-bottomed. I rode on a flat-bottom boat. You could hit that thing with a wave, and it would roll and then come right back to true again.
Mm-hmm.
And if the waters rose, according to verse 20 in chapter 6, chapter 7, the waters rose 15 cubits higher, submerging the mountain. So that meant that the waters were 15 cubits higher than if the flood only took place in Mesopotamia region, the Middle East, 15 cubits higher than the highest mountain in the area. And, okay. Yeah, I do agree with the hypothesis that the internal waters split the continent of Pangaea and separated it. Because if you want to know the whole skimmy, if you read clear over to chapter 11, it talks about the separation of the children of Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And They were the progenitors of several different civilizations, with the last one, I believe, Japheth, being the father of Nimrod, who became the ruler of, the Babylonian or the Mesopotamian Empire.
Mm-hmm. All right, what do you think about?
You know, I'm not discounting anything you say. I just, as a historian, I look and go, we better
clarify. No, that's helpful.
Go ahead, Larry.
No, I was going to say, what you're saying is very helpful because it clarifies some of the things and gives some of the details.
Well, you know, but here's the confusing part about all of this as well. How many people do you think actually built that ark? Do you think it was just Noah and his family?
The Bible doesn't say. My guess is he hired people.
Yeah, he had an army of people.
He had 60 to 80 years to do it. But my guess is he hired a bunch of people to help him, too.
Yeah, he had
to. Because, as I said, it was one of the largest wooden boats ever built.
While it was being constructed, what do you think the people of that era were saying about him? I'm sure he didn't run around saying, you're going to have a flood, you're all going to die. It would have been like the old Twilight Zone where they stormed his boat. What do you think he said?
The Bible doesn't have him saying anything before the flood. The Quran, however, does say that he warned people about the impending flood.
So he did tell them.
And so does Jewish tradition, although not in the Bible, that Noah warned them of the coming flood, and yet the people didn't believe him. Especially, he was building this thing for 60 to 80 years, and they were probably saying, okay, we might have believed you at first, but now nothing's coming. It's not raining. We don't believe you anymore. And so they just kept on doing everything they normally do, eating and drinking and marrying and carrying on with their lives, not believing that the flood was coming until it was too late to do anything about it.
I wonder if they stormed the ship.
Probably. But by that time, the door was shut. The door was shut, I think it was 7 days before the floods came.
They just went in there, shut the door, locked it, and just stayed in there.
Yes.
And waited. And
waited for 7 days, which would have at the time seemed like a long time. In the grand scheme of things, isn't very long.
No, not at all. But it took 7 days to start floating the ark.
Yes, yeah. And in the movie, you will see dramatically how the other people stormed the ark. That's very dramatic in the movie.
I'm going to go see it. I mean, I have to. Okay. It's just, it's...
This is not the first movie made of Noah's Ark.
No, there have been a couple of them.
Well, one of the first talkies back in the 1928 was the most expensive movie that Warner Brothers had ever done up to that time was Noah's Ark. And it was not very accurate in terms of its portrayal of what the Bible story is at all. But tragically, in the grand final flood scene, three extras actually drowned because there was so much water. Yeah.
Wow.
One of the extras, obviously, who did not drown, was John Wayne.
He was an extra in a Noah movie?
He was an ex. John Wayne and Andy Devine were extras in the Noah movie in 1928.
Let's go to Axel, truck driving in Oklahoma. Hi, Axel.
Hey, hi, how are you doing?
Okay,
great,
Axel.
Thank you.
I love archaic measurements, okay? Like your cubit? He was saying it's like 18 inches long. Well, yeah, approximately. A cubit technically is the distance from the tip of your middle finger to your elbow.
Correct.
The tip of your elbow. So I certainly hope Noah was the only one doing the measurement, because your cubit, and my cubit, and his cubit are all probably just a little bit different.
Well, interestingly, there is an arc, a replica of an arc being built in Kentucky that uses a different measurement for a cubit. And so rather than having a 450-foot-long boat, they're building a 570-foot-long boat. But you're absolutely right. The cubit is not an absolute measurement.
Well, let me tell you, regardless of the size, that's pretty big.
It is.
Either way. And then inside, do you think they made rooms for themselves and then like little cells for the animals?
Yes, I mean, they would have had to have living spaces for Noah and his family, and then they would have had rooms for the animals. Obviously, bigger rooms for cows and horses, smaller rooms for rabbits and other things.
Okay, let's go next to Ken in Bridgewater. Bridgewater, where are you, Ken?
Bridgewater, South Dakota.
There you go. Thank you.
Yes, I have information here on this that's important. And I appreciate being able to list it very quickly. But the first thing is, I saw a video on possibly History Channel where a private individual went over, not only found the outline of the hull, but they showed pulling a ground radar thing on wheels over the hull area, and it plotted out the ribs very precisely. Now, this, they had a fake the diagram of the ribs if they were faking it, but this to me was the a great legitimacy of they found it. Now, you people should find that movie someplace or video. Next thing, I saw a 4x5 picture on TV of a B-25 flying over, and they showed the ark actually sticking out of the snow, as George, you had mentioned. So I actually saw that, and the reason I say it's 4x5, 4x5 pictures back 50 years ago used a different contrast paper, and I can recognize a contact print instantly over the conventional ones made with enlarging paper, but so much for that. Now, there was no snow shown, and I don't think there'd be any path going down, because for a path to go down from the ark, the water would have to rescend it very quickly and dried out. Next thing is, if they did have the ark, well, then all those animals would have had a heck of a latrine problem, but hibernation would be the only way they could survive without a lot of friction. And that I saw that thing on just internet on Kentucky is building a replica. There was one made in Oregon that I saw on History Channel. And in regard to the flood, there's not enough water on the earth or atmosphere to cover the whole earth. And it would have to have been confined to the area around the mountains there. And then the Bible says mountains of Iraq, not Mount Iraq. Next thing, kind of a serious humor here. I made up a story of I was going to work one time and it was raining so hard in Seattle that Noah's Ark passed me. So I made up this cartoon joke of showing Boeing Field covered with 10 foot of water and the control tower sticking out, and Noah's Ark is shown barreling down the runway with a couple of jets on it and making a big wake. And there's a cockpit up on top with Noah and his co-pilot, and he's there with a scarf and the goggles. And the co-pilot says, "I don't care what you say, Noah, you're not going to get this tub to plane."
I love it. Well, let me tell you, I too don't think that they could have had that much water surrounding the entire planet. So my question to you, Larry, in the waning moments that we have here, is how much of the biblical story of Noah do you accept?
Well, one of the advantages that I have is that I am neither a scientist nor I know a lot about the Bible, but I wouldn't consider myself a biblical scholar. And so I accept what the Bible says, but to what extent do I believe the earth is 6,000 years old, or do I believe it's 4.5 million billion years old? I'm not going to say that I believe one way or another. Those that believe it was a worldwide flood, though, will say that there does not have to be enough water to cover Kilimanjaro and Mount Everest, because those didn't exist at the time of the flood. Those didn't exist in Pangaea, because Pangaea was relatively flat. It was when Pangaea broke up in the flood that the India went charging up into Asia and pushed up Mount Everest. When two plates came together and pushed up and formed the Rocky Mountains. So that the covering of the earth with flood, with water, was not like it would be today if you try to cover Everest or Kilimanjaro or the Rockies.
That's a fascinating story, Larry, I'll tell you. Noah, and maybe one day we'll all take a trip out there to Mount Ararat and look for this. You never know. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. It's Angelic Pathways next. We'll be right back.